Hey, cashiers. We Have the Receipts podcast is coming at you live from Netflix is a Joke Fest in Los Angeles.
Chris, are you kidding?
No, Netflix is a joke, Courtney, but this is not one of them. Our listeners in LA have the chance to join us for a live recording of our podcast, We Have the Receipts, hosted by me, Chris Burns.
And me, Courtney Revolution.
Join us and a few surprise guests from your favorite Netflix reality shows on Saturday, May 4th at 1 p.m. at a secret location in Hollywood.
To be announced.
Get your tickets for the We Have the Receipts live show at tudum.com/WHTR. That's Tudum, TUDUM.com/WHTR.
Tickets are limited. If you can't make it to the show, we still want to hear your beautiful voice. Leave us a message at speakpipe.com/WeHaveTheReceipts.
You may even hear your own voice on the show.
Grab a ticket at tudum.com/WHTR.
And we'll see you on May 4th in Los Angeles. Bye, cashiers.
You're listening to Skip Intro with me, Krista Smith.
It's about finding where your own voice is, where your own lane is. What is that? Hyper focus on it and super serve that until it serves you.
In September of 2022, I sat with Tyler Perry at the Toronto International Film Festival to talk about his journey through the entertainment industry. He currently sits atop an empire, built on 26 feature films, 20 stage plays, 18 television shows, and his 330-acre studio located in the heart of Atlanta. However, once upon a time, Tyler was a struggling playwright. He initially began writing after watching an Oprah segment on its therapeutic benefits, which then led to his first play, I Know I've Been Changed. Although the play failed to attract an audience, Tyler refused to give up, working tirelessly to raise money and support. At one point, he resorted to living in his car, not far from where Tyler Perry Studios now exists. Success found him after the run of his second play, I Can Do Bad All By Myself, which introduced the world to his character, Medea, who Perry played himself. As Tyler's influence on the entertainment industry grew, he uplifted those around him, jump-starting the acting careers of people like Tessa Thompson, Lance Gross, Jill Scott, and Mary J. Blige, and also reinvigorating the career of the late, great Cicely Tyson. Lots has happened since Tyler and I last spoke. A documentary entitled Maxine's Baby, The Tyler Perry Story, was released about his life. He struck a multi-year first-look deal with Netflix, and his first film to come out of that partnership, Mea Culpa, was released. So today, I'm excited to look back on our previous conversation.
It is such a thrill to meet you. How has your own creativity evolved since you started? Because you started, it was a struggle. You did not have a family in it. This wasn't something that was an obvious road for you. You had to build it brick by brick.
Right. I don't think my work ethic has changed at all. It's still 100 miles an hour, go, 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 go. But the types of things that I want to do and how I want to do it and the stories that I want to tell and how heavy I want the hand or how over the head I want the message, I've been challenged a lot in my own experiences lately, but I know very much that this is what my audience wants to see. So I vacillate between going back to something that my audience would adore and love and then running over and trying to do something else. So all of those things are a part of the pie that complicates the path that I have to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're growing your audience, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You
right.
have to take your audience on the journey.
Yes.
And I imagine your fans from the very beginning are still your fans now.
Yes.
Is it true that you watched an Oprah episode and she kind of unleashed something in you about like writing as therapy? And
Yeah. I was probably the only boy in my school running home to watch Oprah every day at 3 o'clock because she was, first of all, she looked like she could be my aunt or sister, and the wisdoms that she was speaking, I was just like, where is this? I was just on the edge of my seat at every show. There was always something that helped me to want to be better. So she was a great, great inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In 1992 or 91, I think it was, she said something about it being cathartic to write things down. And that's when I started journaling and found, you know, using different characters' names because I didn't want people to know that I was talking about the things that I had experienced at the time. And it was, they were all handwritten notes. I wish I could find those notes today, but years of homelessness, struggling, keeping up with things was tough. But that's where it started for me, that struck a chord in writing things down and understanding understanding that there was a power in that. And that first journal became my first play. I know I've been changed. Yeah.
What you did in Atlanta with your studio, I mean, it's incredible. But you changed the business, whether you knew it or not. Was it confidence? Was it just one foot in front of the other? Was it just a necessity?
It was definitely out of necessity, but I never thought about it in the vein of, okay, let's do something special, let's do something incredible. I was just like, there's a need here. I have a huge audience who really wants to be fed, who wants content that speaks directly to them. So that was the focus. And out of that focus and their adoration and their support, everything else just grew. And I have this twin brain that has to satisfy each side. One is very much an artist who wants to write and direct and do things like that. And the other is a producer and a businessman who is watching the bottom line. So they both work in concert to make sure that the vision is pushed forward. So
do you have a yin and yang with the two sides? And sometimes
the producer always wins. When it comes to the money, it always wins. Like it's almost like I'm having this crazy conversation with myself. Like, wow, that was a beautiful scene you just wrote. This side's going too expensive. Cut that back. Got to figure out something else there. So yeah.
Right. That's something that you actually bring up, something that people don't actually think about when they're watching a movie. Just the average film goer about, oh, this scene has to be cut because it's just going to be too expensive.
Yeah.
You know, people just love what they see. As a director, what's your process? Do you rehearse with the talent again and again and again? Do you like to just do it in the moment? What is your process?
No. We show up on set and we walk through it. I say, here's what I'm seeing. Here's what I feel. What do you think? I'll hear their opinions. We'll go back and forth for a minute and then, okay, great. Let's roll.
What do you think differentiates you from other filmmakers?
That's a very good question. I tell you, I think that the thing that's making people have tremendous success, be it in streaming or online or whatever you're doing there in social media, it's a connection with an audience. And from day one, I've had a tremendous connection with my audience, with my base, and I super serve them. So they've been extremely supportive, which has allowed me to have the space to say yes to certain things and no to certain things and walk away to certain deals when they didn't feel right. And all of that is something that, unfortunately, a lot of creators don't have. And I think that if more people had that level of control and that level of support behind them, we would see much, much more creative ideas out there that aren't cut and paste and edited by studios and other execs, and the audience never sees what the actual artists wanted it to be. So it's been my audience.
I read that you paid Cicely Tyson a large sum of money for just a single day's work on one of your sets. Is that true?
The only reason I mentioned it is because she wrote it in her book, but yes. The woman made $6,000 for Sounder, and she was 96 years old when she died. So there was this whole period of many, many years, because she was very selective about what she did. She wouldn't do things that she felt debased Black people. So she passed up a lot of roles. So I felt I want to make sure that for the rest of your life, you can be okay and be comfortable and not be worried. Can you imagine having that kind of success, being married to Miles Davis? Everybody knows your name and you can't pay the rent. I mean, really. So yes. And that's one of the moments that I'm really, really proud of. She was an amazing woman.
Anybody you meet has got a, you know, super fan over you. And I'm sure you get asked a lot of questions. And one of them has to be like, what's advice do you have for me? What do you do this? Da, da, da. But what is some of the worst advice you ever got?
Ooh, that's going to be hard for me to measure, because I look at my life as never having any failures, because everything that I thought was a failure worked for my good. So even if somebody said, you shouldn't do this or you should do this, and I did it, as awful as it may have been in the time, looking back at it now, it taught me such a valuable lesson to prepare me for exactly where I am now. So I don't know if I could say that there's been any horrible advice.
And what advice do you give people when they are starting out and whatnot? And
depends on what they're asking, because, you know, if somebody says to me, I want to be the next you, I say, first thing, listen. No, you can be a better you than trying to be me, right? So it's about finding where your own voice is, where your own lane is. What is that? Hyper-focus on it and super-serve that until it serves you.
Okay, so Tyler, tell me, who would be at your dream dinner party, living or dead?
Of course, I'd start with Dr. King. And I have so many questions for him. And knowing so many people who knew him, you know, in Atlanta, it would be really, really powerful to have him there. Lena Horne, I've always wanted to meet. And it would be a very small party. It's not a whole lot of people that I would want to be there, but the two of them for sure, and my mother, of course.
Yeah. What would you serve?
It would be Southern soul food, for sure. And if they're dead, it won't matter if they get high blood pressure anyway. So we'll all just eat well. We'll all eat well. Yeah. Yeah.
What is your guilty pleasure in terms of bad habits?
You would bring this to me when I haven't had meat in 30 days. But not because I'm a vegetarian or vegan, just because I was like, okay, you got to slim down a little bit. But sweets, I love sweets. Cookies, donuts.
Any kind of bread product?
Comfort food, yeah. Especially when I'm writing, because I'll write and just eat. And oh my God, that's good. That's good too. So yeah.
So this season, I'm asking everyone on the podcast, for you, what are your small wins? What are the stuff that you're grateful for? The little wins. Like, I was really excited that there was a Dr. Pepper outside there earlier today. That's a small, kind of shallow win. I have two sons, and I'm glad that they've so far had a great week at school, and everybody's happy and on time and stuff like that. Just a little thing. So what's a small win for you?
I love RC radio control airplanes. Mm-hmm. For me and my son, now he's interested. He wants to learn. So for he and I to sit there for hours flying, and I'm teaching him about charging batteries and how to land and all those things.
Wait,
really amazing.
Like little planes? Like
yeah, you fly them in the air. Yeah, that's a huge win for me.
Where did you discover that? When did you?
I was running in the park one day, and I never had a hobby. And I saw a guy flying. I was like, wow, that's really, really cool. So I went and got one and started learning. I crashed so many of them, it was ridiculous. I finally went back to the hobby store. The guy says, you have more money than sense. Stop it. So I finally learned how to fly them, and it helped me to just relax. Because when you're focusing on that plane there, you can't focus on anything else. So being able to pass that on to him is really, really great.
And what do the planes look like there? Like biplanes or jet planes?
Biplanes, jets, 747s, little Cirrus, all kinds of little planes. Some foam, some balsa, some fiberglass.
And you actually can crash them, obviously, because if you're not paying attention, they're going right into a tree or something.
Yeah, so you have to focus on what you're doing.
Now, have you taken to drones?
Drones is also for people who are younger, because you press a button, it goes, and it comes back. No, this you actually have to fly. You have to know the technology. So,
Oh, my God, this is breaking news. It's like Tyler Perry has a hobby, everybody. And guess what? It's like flying planes. Yeah. Do you have any desire to actually, like, fly a plane?
Well,
like Tom Cruise and all those crazy people that fly the big planes?
Not like Harrison Ford. But that's
Ford,
another reason I wanted to. When I started flying them, and I would watch them in the air, because I had a very healthy fear of flying. So watching them in the air and realizing they weren't falling apart, it's just the wind blowing them around, helped me to understand it. So then I got my pilot's license and started flying myself so that I could get over my fear of flying, and now I don't have that fear anymore.
Where does the fear of flying come from, do you think?
Probably just, for me, the lack of understanding of what it is. You're gonna get in a tube with two things sticking out the side of it with engines in the back. It's going to shoot you across the country. So the lack of understanding of the engineering of it all was really a part of it. But now I get it.
Mm-hmm. I had that same thing. I have anxiety around it too. I mean, I think everybody, a large portion of the public actually does.
Yeah.
And you try to rationalize.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's like, for me, I think it's more about I'm not in control. I have to, like, just let go of it all, and I can't. Nothing I'm going to do is
going to be able to,
is going to change it. But it is. A lot of people have a real
it's
acute
healthy. Yeah,
fear.
It's healthy, but it should also make you curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love sitting and talking with you, and
Thank you.
To be mindful of your time. Otherwise, we could just be gabbing on and on and on.
Yeah, it feels really comfortable.
All kinds of things.
Comfortable chat. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Krista Smith, your host and creator of the show. Skip Intro is produced and edited by Isabel Arricchio and engineered by Dave Corwin. Special thanks to our coordinator, Alyssa Hillman. Please subscribe, rate, and review Skip Intro wherever you've been listening. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Krista Smith. If you enjoy the podcast, please go to netflixqe.com for more. That's netflixqueue.com.